Coach Salt. Uncle Bayford. Hold on, bring it down. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. I think it's a real appropriate song. Everyone's asleep, everyone but me, and I feel like I'm doing this all by myself. A person who personifies those very fracking lyrics is the man I've got on for the first hour today. And I had an extensive conversation with this man last night, which I very rarely do with any of my guests. I normally like come in blind and come out swinging. So, his name is Ryan Dawson, otherwise known as Rise to Sense. He's the maker of a couple of documentary films, which... Well, you know how there's a lot of 9/11 conspiracy theories and a lot of 9/11 conspiracy documentaries, and they all kind of, you know, parrot each other and go over the same territory and don't kind of illustrate a whole bunch of things, leave things out, that sort of thing. This guy's actually kind of figured out a lot of that stuff and really gone through intricately, all right? And I say intricately, operatively. And debunk a lot of these mainstream theories about 9/11. So, his name is Ryan Dawson. Welcome to the show, mate.
I'm going to forgive you for calling me at 8 a.m. on a Saturday because that intro was very good.
Yeah, I'm known for my intros.
Now, the whole reason I did a 9/11 film was because the other ones were so bad that I saw. They were just full of disinformation, especially the early ones. I'd had everything written out, and I really didn't want to do a movie. Frankly, I just didn't feel like it. It's a lot of work. And when I'm like, just go read it. But then I figured out there is a large section of the population that just doesn't read, especially something that's like over 90 pages. So I made a 3-hour and 40-minute film. And then I shaved that down to 2 hours because the original one had a lot about the Iraq War in it too. And then I just felt like that's kicking a dead horse now. Everyone knows we were lied to about that. But they didn't back when it started. And so I made a War by Deception and updated just, it every year.
Just to address, it was really funny because the very first comment that I received on my Facebook when I was advertising that you were coming on the show was, hold on, let me see. I'm sure Ryan Dawson won't talk about Israelis and the Mossad agents that were caught and released by the DHS. Could you address that for a moment?
I'm the very first person to talk about 9/11 in Israel and make a movie about it. And the other one since then have been springboarding off of things I've written and things that I've made in film. And I've made, I don't know how, a couple hundred YouTube videos about it. And it wasn't the DHS. It was the FBI and Joint Terrorism Task Force that let the Israelis go. Not just the dancing Israelis that a lot of people know about, but the Israelis caught on the George Washington Bridge in a van packed with the RDX explosives. That's who released them. And Chertoff was later head of the Department of Homeland Security, but that didn't even exist until 2002. They didn't create it yet. They had an office for it, which became that after the Congress passed it officially, but there wasn't even a DHS yet. So they didn't even have their rhetoric wrong.
Now, you said, I don't know why anyone Chertoff would write that. You said the name Chertoff. Sounds like somebody who used to work for the KGB.
Yeah, he used to work in the department or the Justice Department. Gosh, I'm so used to not calling it the Injustice Department. But he used to work there, and then he got moved to become the head of the DHS later. But his whole family's messed up. They're all corrupt. And he's a Zionist bastard. His cousin wrote for Popular Mechanics for only one issue that dealt with 9/11 purely to help try and cover it up. I mean, it was a joke how bad. It was just completely horrible, the cover-up. And the whole 9/11 commission was a joke. That was chaired by Lee Hamilton, the same shill they had for the Iran-Contra whitewash. He was still alive, and they brought him in. He wasn't their first pick, though. Their first pick was Henry Kissinger. That looks terrible. He's discredited himself so much with all his killings all over Southeast Asia. And he ended up turning it down. And I don't think it was because it was so obvious Henry Kissinger would cover up anything bad the government had done. It was because he would have had to have revealed some of his partners that he financial partners, and he couldn't do that because he's involved with so many crooks. But his private equity firm, he goes through Trium Equity and also Hollinger Inc., which is a media conglomerate in Canada. And on the board is himself and Richard Pearl, who is in the Defense Department, who's probably the worst neocon ever, and James R. Thompson, who was on the 9/11 Commission. So his business partner was still on there. And then Lee Hamilton was the chair. His best friends. Oh, get this. Lee Hamilton was the Democrat for the Iran-Contra. The chair for the Republicans was Dick Cheney. He was the vice president during 9/11.
Yeah, you just can't make this stuff up, bro.
No. It's awful, but I mean, that should have been pointed out in the first few seconds. You know, here, what, Lee Hamilton? This is the guy that whitewashed Iran-Contra. And Iran-Contra is a known conspiracy theory. I mean, they convicted Poindexter of conspiracy. It's officially admitted that that was conspiracy. I mean, that it involved multiple countries and billions of dollars, and they murdered tens of thousands of people. You're talking about Iran and Israel and Nicaragua and the United States. They're all in on it, using the Contras to fight the Sandinistas, to murder all these people, and they use drug money. And it, I mean, everything from top to bottom, it was a conspiracy. CIA running in guns and drugs, and it all fell apart when a pilot crashed, and they ended up being CIA in a plane full of drugs, you know, and they had to start explaining this. And Ollie North and them, I mean, this is all in the 80s. If you guys are too young to remember this, go look it up. It was a huge thing. It was like Watergate level. I mean, it was a massive scandal. And the same people, because a lot of them just got pardoned. I mean, they were found guilty and they just got pardoned by the president because Bush's father was in on it. And that was that. And a few more of them got pardoned by Clinton, and only a few went to jail. But they were involved in the 9/11 in the same cover up, the same people. It's unreal.
Well, I think it's. When you go into a job interview, they say, have you got previous experience?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
There's a man that could be trusted.
Prior to being the vice president and president, George Bush's father was the director of CIA. So, you know, you're never ex-CIA.
Yeah. Apparently, he's one of the very few ex-presidents who still continues to read the daily CIA updates and reports and things like that, which all presidents are entitled to.
I'm sure his son isn't reading anything.
Yeah, I doubt he even reads the warning labels on his Prozac.
No,
embarrassing.
He was so embarrassing. Every time Junior went to make a speech in a foreign country or something, I would cringe. He'd mix up analogies. He'd make up words. He'd straight up forget things. I was just hoping, man, I hope the translator is sort of covering for all this. It was so bad.
As somebody living in a foreign country during the Bush administration, I can assure you the translators did not cover it up. In fact, I saw a documentary film that was made called George W. Bushisms. We got a whole documentary just basically of example after example of George W. Bush messing up. And God dang, that stuff is funny, man. I mean,
he's very good for Saturday Night Live and the comedians in the U.S., but he really hurt Americans' reputation in general. I mean, after all the lies and deception he did and the way he behaved, you know, all Americans are just a bunch of overfed, over-medicated retards. So, as an American living overseas, I got to deal with that. Every time I meet somebody from the U.K. or whatever, I got to represent and show that we're not all morons. No, we did not believe that. Actually, the majority of Americans opposed the war in Iraq, protested it, millions in the street and everything. It just wasn't on TV. So it looked like we're all just, yeehaw, go get them towel heads or whatever. And it wasn't like that at all. The only people acting like that would be the Senate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find it very interesting is that the people that we elect to represent us never seem to actually be like us. Have you noticed that?
Somebody who you vote for is like billionaires and things.
Yeah, I mean, they're as different from the average American as you could possibly get.
It's just, you know, to get elected, you have to be on TV, realistically. I mean, to even know what your name is, you've got to be able to get on TV. And to get on TV, you've either got to be very wealthy already, or you've got to be a puppet of the wealthy, willing to do, you know, willing to rent yourself out to the highest bidder, which is what 99% of our Congress does. And that's the problem, you know. Corporations have figured out, you know, they can use the government as a giant ATM machine to get our tax money or money borrowed from the Fed allocated to themselves, and they don't have to pay the debt. The debt gets pushed on the public. And so it's just become one big rent-a-government. And, you know, TV kills. And, the you know, shows like yours and mine and things on the web are putting some dents in it, but not enough yet. I mean, it's a country of 300 million people, so it's change comes a lot slower than a smaller nation like Egypt or Iceland. You know, it's very hard to organize in a country that size.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that in New Zealand, there's only 4 million people, and there's a couple of radio shows in New Zealand that cover these sort of topics with any form of credibility whatsoever. And they're all one day a week tops, with the exception of mine. And I would be really proud of that, but the reality is I'm actually ashamed. You know, 4 million people, only one person's doing it 5 days a week. Come on.
Well, maybe the one person doing it is so good that they decided, oh, we don't need that one.
Yeah, see, that's sad. That's even worse.
You need some competition, but I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess a lot of it is because it's not – I mean, there's plenty of corruption, but everything New Zealand's doing is pretty small scale compared to the U.S. Or China or something, and they're like not as interested in other countries' politics as their own, maybe. I don't know. But the things that happen affect the whole world, so you should be interested.
Yeah. Well, see, I really am. And my analysis of New Zealand news, I mean, you've imagine you're living in a small town and the news is about a dude who wasn't wearing his bicycle helmet gets injured, or there was a car crash and somebody was sent to a hospital, or there's somebody's cat stuck up a tree. That's actually the big mainstream news in New Zealand.
That's kind of like Japan, because there's so little crime, even though Japan is 120 million people. Like the prefecture I live in hasn't had a murder in 5 years. That's in the entire state. And so that's, you know, when people say, oh, well, Japan has no guns and they have a low crime rate, I'm like, they don't have a crime rate by any kind of weapon. It's like so rare. So some little thing happens, I'm like, this is really on TV? Like, that's what they're talking about? You know, like, not cat in the tree, but a car wreck or something. That would definitely be on the news, because nothing else bad is happening. They have no fear to sell. They talk about these stupid islands between Japan and Korea all the time. I call it the Asia's Chick-fil-A party. It's so extreme over nothing, because there's nothing else. Until 2011, now we've had something with Fukushima, but prior to that, there was no news.
Well, see, even then, I saw this video of a French expat in Tokyo, and he was filming himself, and he was screaming at the camera. You know what they're covering right now when all those radiation's coming down and massive tsunamis and everything like that? You know what's on TV? It turns on the TV. It's a commercial about pizzas.
Yeah.
I just found it so funny. And I don't know how to correct this entire situation. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not my responsibility.
But it was nonstop right after it happened. I mean, it was on every channel 24 hours a day covering
it. Probably would be.
If you had electricity, it was on. But yeah. Eventually, you know, they quit, you know, doing it 24 hours a day and went back to regular programming. Because, I mean, if you do that too long, people are just going to be in a complete panic state. So that you have to eventually bring back the comedians and everything else. That was like the U.S. in 9/11. It was 24 hours a day coverage of the planes hitting the building over and over and over again. And after a few months, it went back to the regular cop and lawyer shows shooting people and, you know, normal U.S. reality TV trash. But because you just can't cover it forever.
Well, things lose their effect after a while, I think. And I'm wondering, when is 9/11 going to use its effect? Because it's still being used to justify everything, isn't it? Even more than a decade on.
Yeah, it launched the new war on terror, which is a war on a tactic, so you can never win. There's no way to have a decisive battle. There's no country you can go defeat and say, aha, we've won. It's a little bit like the war on communism or the Cold War, which I'm not pro-communist or anything, but that was just an excuse to invade Central and South America, usually, or in Southeast Asia as well. It had nothing to do with communism. And in the brief window between, they would have the war on drugs. And we'd say, he's a drug dealer, and we'd go bomb Panama. I mean, we invaded Grenada, like they're a threat, a national threat to the United States. And it was all for corporate interest. They always give the public one pretext, communism, terrorists, or whatever. And then there's always more private, more sinister motivations for specific corporations usually. And it's usually about neocolonialism when you're talking about Africa or Central America. But man, look at Africa today. Africa is kind of like France's South America to the U.S. or Eastern Europe to Russia. I mean, they're just routinely invaded and beaten down by Europeans there. And it's neocolonialism. They don't want any country to nationalize their oil or gold or whatever resource they have. They don't, or sell it to China, as in the case of the Sudans. Because it's not that we want the oil, and it's not that we don't want China to have it. Oh, we're hitting the music. You got a commercial?
Yeah.
Dang. I'll have to explain that afterward.
Yeah, right. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com. You can listen live in the chat room there if you wish. Ryan Dawson, Rise 2 Cents, is my guest. We'll be right back.
Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what yeah. you mean it's business time.
Welcome back.
Where do you find these?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you go freaking nuts. And New Zealanders have a really whack sense of humor, to use the Gangsterland parlance. My very special guest is Ryan Dawson, otherwise known as Rise 2 Cents. And we were talking
about neocolonialism.
Yeah.
Neocolonialism, yeah. Sorry, I jumped in segue to sell myself. I do radio too. But yeah, I was getting at it, just saying. A lot of people like to say it's over a certain resource or something, like, or a one-size-fits-all thing. Oh, it's for the petrodollar. Oh, it's for oil or da-da-da-da. But a lot of these things, like in Mali, for example, recently, it's not just about, like, what resource the West, to paraphrase, can grab from a place. It's that the other nation doesn't get it. Because, let's say, if Iran were to be able to refine their own oil or get nuclear power so that they could free up all the oil that they're currently consuming on electricity and put it on the world market and have that surplus of cash, or any nation, pick it, whatever. You know, if Mali could do its natural gas and gold, and stop getting loans from the IMF, where they're just stuck in this perpetual debt system. If they can pay for their own infrastructure debt-free because they're selling some super resource, then they're no longer caught in the cycle of being puppets for world banks and then leasing out land and resources to multinationals, you know, who gobble up all their raw goods and make finished products and sell them back to them. And that's the system that is now in basically any country in Africa, almost everywhere in Central America, and a lot of Southeast Asia. They openly have sweatshops, virtual slavery. They don't own their own land. It's all in Indian reservations are like this too, by the way. They lease everything, these giant multinationals who are taking the rubber, the tin, the metals, the energy resources, and refining them and making products in Europe or in America or in Canada or Australia, and then selling it back. And they can't get out of debt. They've got two options. They can completely destroy their currency by just printing more money to pay off their debts, or they can sell off assets, which is what they're doing. And the projects that get appraised in these places are totally overpriced. We'll build you an electric plant, but the cost has no reflection as to what it ought to cost. But these companies know, oh, you're getting foreign aid? Well, then the price just went up to X. And the governments don't care because they personally profit. They're selling their people out. And if they don't do that, then they'll get replaced. You know, and their cousin will be put in power, whatever. And that's why you always see the U.S. and Europe supporting the theocracies in Saudi Arabia, the Zionists in Israel, whatever religious crazies they can, because they're very predictable. It's easy to throw them into conflict. And they always put a target on the secular countries. Went after Libya, went after Iraq, Syria right now. Mali was one of the only real democracies in Africa. It's being
I just got a picture sent to me by Pastor Lindsay Williams of hundreds of charred and burned Christians in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah, that's been going on as well. And South Sudan as well. You'll get that. And back in 2006, that's really what turned the war around against Lebanon, is the Israelis went and bombed the Christian sections of Beirut. And then you saw a complete 180 in the media. They, wait, Christians are dying? People who count? And the PR fell apart for Israel. But in Nigeria, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian, Muslim, whatever. You're an African, you don't matter. And that's just how it is, sadly. And they do that between different Muslim sects as well. They're always supporting these Wahhabi, Salafi, jihadist, Sunni types, the Taliban types, you know. I call Al-Qaeda America's Frankenstein. But really, the leadership of these, there was never a full break between Al-Qaeda and the CIA. Never. It's not just blowback. These are mercenaries. I call them privateers, which is basically a secret mercenary. Same system they used to have with pirates, say. Because if a privateer gets busted, there's nothing you can do but hang them. Well, in today, they go to some torture dungeon somewhere. But the sponsors responsible have that distancing factor so that you can't really lay it on them. So the U.S. can use these rent-a-terrorists or useful idiots and attack whoever they want through proxy and not get blood on their own hands. And, well, the new direction it's going is it's going to be all mechanical. We won't even need these patsies anymore because we have these drones. And that's where you can get a mechanical killing machine to go in and shoot people at a wedding or kill kids in Pakistan or Yemen, as we've been doing. And if they shoot it down, you don't lose one single person. You just build another one and send it out. And these things can hit from miles out. It's disgusting, and it's really a dismal future if you think about it, because the more in history, the more war has become mechanized, you know, being able to drop bombs from far up in the sky, even with a manned plane or tanks, and where there's more cognitive dissonance, and there's more of a gap between the technological superpowers and the people they're attacking, where the risk has been removed. It's not like you got to go out there with a gun yourself and risk your son or something. It's the blood of your nation. Now, with drones or with these extremely high-tech artillery that can hit, you know, cruise missiles from miles away, whatever, they feel like, well, there's no risk. Will we make X amount of profit? Sure. And so they're much more willing to have wars of choice, where they can just say, well, it's only so-and-so, and we'll completely dominate them and forget about morality, and they'll just murder them. They'll murder people with sanctions. They don't think about it, and the press doesn't really write about it. They don't allow journalists in there. Look at all the things that have happened in Gaza, depleted uranium, I mean, white phosphorus. But we're not seeing the pictures like we used to. Even not so long ago with Vietnam, when someone died, it was on TV. So-and-so died today in this attack, and there were pictures of you know, people who died. Nowadays, if you even show a coffin with an American flag on it, you'll get fired. And so journalists are scared to death to cover it. Some still do, but they end up being online journalists in time because you can't show it on TV. And it's a huge problem. And the other resources war itself, you don't necessarily need to go get oil or opium or a certain thing. The Pentagon, which I call the War Department, is the largest umbrella corporation in the world. And if you look at the contracts for Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon and Northrop Grumman and the alphabet soup of these giant aerospace companies and logistic companies, Kellogg Brown Root, Halliburton, etc., they're spending $500 billion easily on that alone. And so war is a resource in and of itself. And they'll spend millions of dollars on a couple missiles to blow up a tent or something, you know. Total overkill, because the whole purpose of war is profit to begin with. They're not really worried about the people in the tent. They just need some excuse to feed the public so they can get their war going, to justify the kind of spending they had during the Cold War, when there really was a threat with the Soviet Union, at least more than now. And they didn't want to let cash cow go, so that's why 9/11, that's the purpose of 9/11, was to restart the Cold War.
Now, can I ask you as well, war to me is, as you said, profit. However, I also think that it's debt, right? Where do they loan all this money from to buy all these weapons and things like that, you know?
Or even a war between two other parties, the U.S. will loan to both sides and provide weapons to both sides. A perpetual conflict is perpetual profit. And it totally sets nations back. I mean, we've blown people back into the Stone Age. In Iraq, we took out, I shouldn't say we, I should say the U.S. government. I sure as hell didn't do it. But the government blew up all their water treatment facilities, their agriculture, things that are not military targets. Just attacking the civilian population, they were without electricity.
Refineries, bridges, power stations, you know.
And then hired themselves to rebuild some of it. Yeah. Very slowly.
Hired Halliburton.
Yeah. Well, of course. Halliburton, you know, Cheney was the former CEO there, and Lockheed Martin, Cheney's wife, was president and still on the board of directors all the way until 2001. Yeah. So it's a revolving door.
That's what you call a country just going to Halliburton in a handbasket.
Yeah. Northrop Grumman, too, had Douglas Feith and Paul Wolfowitz work there. But what they do is they're not on the payroll as, you know, somebody with a brain that actually builds planes or anything. They're just there as a consultant, you know, kind of like Newt Gingrich getting $100,000 for his historical advice. And to be, or a lawyer, but they don't actually work on any cases. So you can put a politician on the payroll of a company by saying, oh, he gave a speech. Or he's a consultant, and there are many ways of being able to pay them without having them be an official employee. And then there's a lot of insider trading, too. I mean, all these neocons heavily invest in all the companies they're about to allocate money to. Another thing that happened before Iraq was they let the Pentagon divvy out the money rather than Congress. Congress appropriated it, but the Pentagon allocated it. And, of course, they allocated it to themselves You know, of course. And there are all of them. I've done a big chalkboard video about this. Every single department were all involved with the same industries they gave the money to. And it's an outrageous amount of money to invade a nation based on lies. These lies weren't coming from oil companies. They're coming from PNAC. I mean, we went to war in Iraq for Israel, period. I mean, the rhetoric for Iraq started in the 90s. And it was, you know, the same stuff, weapons of mass destruction, anthrax, mobile weapon labs, chemical weapons. All that stuff had already been said. All they did was re-say it again after 9/11 and it would work. But when they started saying this, same people too, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Fife, Libby, etc. When they started saying this back in the 90s, there was no euro, there was no EU, it wasn't about the petrodollar, Saddam wasn't threatening to go on the euro, whatever, it didn't even exist. They were attacking Iraq because Iraq was a threat to Israel. And all of these guys, they worked for Netanyahu. They got think tanks in Israel. Some of them work there. Paul Wolfowitz's sister is a settler. They're all involved deeply with the Knesset and the Zionists. And they come over and they're dual citizens. I mean, this is really, really obvious who lied us into war in Iraq. You can trace back each one. Miller and Sapphire and all the stuff they write in the New York Times. It was just a big triangle between a couple, you know, of their moles in the media, the INC, and the PNAC goons who were working mostly in the Defense Department or working for the Vice President under Cheney, who was one evil, evil man. But yeah, but you can't get that information out because you can't really sloganeer it the way you can by saying no war for oil or no war for X. It just wasn't that simple. And of course, oil was a motivation. But if you notice, we didn't get the oil.
What seemed to me is that the initial invasion of Iraq in the early 90s and the subsequent reinvasion of Iraq in the early 2000s seemed to me to be a military command and control tactic so that they could place military assets within the regions. I watched this documentary called The Secret Wars of Desert Storm or something like that, and a section of the film was the American intelligence trying to convince Saudi royalty that Iraqi tanks were massing on their border when they weren't. And the Saudi royalty said, show us the satellite pictures. And the Americans said, no, you're just going to have to trust us.
Right.
And they did. And now there are military bases, thanks to that big lie, permanently in Saudi Arabia, which provides a great strategic striking capacity to really anywhere in the Middle East.
That made Osama mad were the bases in Saudi Arabia. But after 9/11... they got rid of those bases that were in Mecca. They moved them out because they were going into Iraq anyway. But Iraq's right in the heart of the Middle East. It gives the U.S. a military presence there. But the first Gulf War, too, was based on lies. The whole babies on incubator speech. I'm sorry you've been over that before.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that time, the internet was just a little baby. And so if you contrast the war support for Gulf War I, with, oh, they're invading Kuwait and there's a new Hitler, because they always say everybody's Hitler. You know, everyone had their yellow ribbons and things. There were very few dissenting voices. But by the time the second war came around, overwhelmingly everybody almost was anti-war. And there were some yahoos with the American flag magnets made in China on the back of their SUVs and all, but they were a minority.
Well, you know, never underestimate the power of a small, shrill, shrieking minority, eh? You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. A very special guest is Ryan Dawson, Rise 2 Cents, and we'll be right back after the break at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. The shows are archived both at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. The archives are relatively easy to find. The show survives almost solely on your donations and subscriptions. So if you do appreciate what we do here by giving a platform to commentators and people who basically have a real hard life, and let me explain something. Anybody who comes out saying what they believe to be the truth will offend both sides of every argument. It's unavoidable. If you come out saying that the left and right paradigm is false, both the lefties and the rightists will attack you. Telling the truth is something that you get very little support for. Okay, I think there was a famous quote saying that only a patriot will go through all that kind of suffering, and after he's successful, after he's actually successfully caused the revolution itself, then everybody suddenly jumps on the bandwagon because then it costs nothing to be a patriot. That's the kind of people that I like to have on this show, because those are the people that really do deserve our attention. I understand that the world has no real justice, that those who do the right thing are those who wind up being at the hands of suffering and discrimination for a good part of their lives before being accepted. I understand that. However, I have never accepted the way the world works. I have only ever sought to make it the way I want to see it. That's what the show is about. If you support that cause, please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, donate, or perhaps subscribe for as little as a dollar a month, just so that we can give you some nice commercial-free archives, save you heaps of listening time. I put a lot of effort into it, just so that, you know, I don't have to keep begging for cash. In fact, I don't even like doing this right now at this particular moment, because I'd rather just be talking to my very special guest, Ryan Dawson. Welcome back.
I'm going to donate after that speech. It's true. It's what you said, and it's like not just about right and left, especially those of us who dabble into conspiracies. We'll catch it from both sides, too, because there's two extremes there. You'll get, on the one hand, people who don't believe in any conspiracy ever, like there's never been a covert operation by any intelligence agency ever. And that's what a conspiracy is. Any covert operation by CIA, KGB, Mossad, whatever, is a bunch of people organized, getting together, lying to everyone else, and doing something that would be otherwise considered criminal in secret. So it happens all the time. Then you have this other camp that believe practically any conspiracy they're ever given, and they are the ones who cause the stigma against everything in the middle, the legitimate things that have happened, where there are conspiracies. It's hard to get your foot in the door because of all the crazies, the Jonestowners, as I call them. You know, Alex Jones recently saying that, you know, light bulbs control your mind and stuff like that, or David Icke talking about his aliens and things. It's just total nonsense. And even when they might say something that's true once in a blue moon, because it's so polluted by all the other ridiculous stuff about Bavarians and Luciferians or whatever, it turns people off. Because, you know, very, very open-minded people might listen to that and go, okay, well, I'm just going to ignore 98% of that and try and pull out the nuggets. But like, why pull out the nuggets? Why do you have to encase things in all this infotainment stuff? And the reason they do it, I believe, and I don't think they're that sinister. Some of them just are that stupid. But I think a lot of them do it because fear sells and they need the money. Because if they didn't have it, they wouldn't be on air. And so they realize if you're a charlatan, you can make some cash.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, be afraid, donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I just had to throw that out there.
They can kill you. They can kill you with your toaster. I have the documents. They're going to put you in a FEMA camp. I mean, to this doomsday thing, the dollar's going to collapse tomorrow every day, and they're going to put you in camps and all that. And, you know, the government's really, really nasty, of course, but you know, to make up all these generic paths to nowhere doesn't resolve anything, doesn't solve anything. It's just like saying they did it without getting any names of people, industries, or specific motives and no details about 9/11 or Iraq or anything else. It's just the same kind of speech over and over again. And I just see that as a go nowhere.
Have you ever seen somebody launch like private prosecutions against alleged globalists for their alleged crimes?
Sometimes you see it, but you'd have to be reading the business press or something, you know. A lot of the Russian oligarchs, some of Putin went after them, threw some in jail. Khodorkovsky, for example, sitting in jail. Got his nose broken in jail, too. I think that's wonderful, and that happens to a billionaire. But then again, a lot of the oligarchs just fled and are living either in the UK or Israel because no one else will accept them. There's no extradition treaty. So they're just there owning their soccer teams or football teams, you might say, and living the high life. Nothing ever happens to them. But during the SNL scandal, the savings and loan scandal in the 80s, dozens and dozens of people went to jail. But it seems like the further along we go in time, the less the crooks get in any trouble. I mean, they're getting bailouts from the government. All those people engaged in fraud, I guess with the exception of Madoff, he did sometime, and Jack Abramoff. But, I mean, it's like one guy or two guys. All those people at Goldman Sachs, all those people in the Bank of America. I mean, Bank of America was going around bragging, saying they didn't receive any bailouts, even though they did take TARP money. They spent, where they got $30 billion, they spent all of it on bonuses for themselves, for administration. And the sly thing they did is Merrill Lynch and Countrywide, a couple of the financials that they took over, who were floundering and didn't get a bailout until after they merged with Bank of America. So Bank of America gobbled up his competition, and then his competition got bailouts, which really went under the umbrella of Bank of America itself. So they did get bailouts. And then to make all that, that was all the public bailouts from the government, right? To make it worse than that, we found out from Bloomberg when there was that partial audit of the Fed, there were $16 trillion divvied out to all these different institutions. And in the top three was Bank of America. I mean, they were getting money from the Fed secretly. And they had paid back how? What percent? None. They hadn't paid back any of it. Nothing. And that's our money. I mean, we ate that with inflation. I mean, the dollar tanked. I remember when the yen used to be 125 to the dollar. It's now 88. And it had gone down as far as 75. And the reason it went back up is because of the natural disasters in Japan and Shinzo Abe and their own stupidity. But, yeah, I mean, all these currencies are in free fall, and it's everywhere, and you rarely see prosecutions, rarely. If they do go to jail, like Bernard Carrick went to jail for fraud, he had a role in 9/11. He was a police chief there. He's the guy that said they found an unburned passport, and the one who denied, you know, this. He said they arrested.
Yeah, he's like walking around in knee-high pulverized dust, and he goes, oh, there's a passport underneath here. That's remarkably.
That was the second one they found. They found Al Jarrah, whose cousin ended up being busted a year later in Lebanon as a spy for Israel. But they found Jarrah's passport in Pennsylvania.
I mean, that was speaking of which, I really wanted to. One thing I did want to talk with you today is actually reiterate the conversation we had last night, because I was asking you questions about the plane hitting the Pentagon, and I was like, "Where's wreckage? Where's this, that, and the other?" And then in your documentary, I think back, what was it about the 1:20 mark? And I'll put the link up on the website for you as well, because I think it was spectacular. You actually did show the pictures that they showed on other conspiracy documentaries about the plane hitting, and they obscured the bottom 100 foot of the Pentagon that was completely taken out by the wings, which went through it like a hot knife through butter and stuff like that. And they obscured and didn't put in the pictures of
it
all
had
the
to be on
landing gear
too.
That they found, the engines.
Nothing.
That they found, the
they're
DNA
like,
of the passengers.
Yeah, they were just like, Loose Change made these claims. I didn't see the final cut. I wasn't going to stomach it. But in the first couple of movies, which were promoted like Coney 2012 or Free Tibet or any of these movies, you had this hyper push behind it. And this is before Facebook or YouTube even. And, you know, I got a DVD in the mail, right? What is this? You know, and I watched it and I was just laughing. You know, I'm like, oh, this is a joke, right? And it just exploded. But they made ridiculous claims in there. I mean, saying like a plane fit into an 18-foot hole. And they just completely, you know, sort of gerrymandered the pictures, made sure there was either water spraying underneath or a truck parked below, and they zoomed in on the second floor.
Or huge amounts of smoke obscuring it.
Yeah, exactly. They never showed you the first floor, which is where the plane hit, except for the, you know, the tip of the tail or whatever. They never showed that. And they're like, well, there weren't, you know, plane parts outside. So and so this one journalist said or whatever. I'm like, that's because the plane's inside the building, and I know he didn't go in there because it's still on fire. But there's this massive hole in the Pentagon, and there were parts of the plane still all over the place. The landing gear made the punch-out hole in the C-ring. And that's another misleading thing they say is that the plane had to go through all these rings. And that's not true. That was the upper floors. The bottom floor was clean through. It only had the two walls to go through. Enter one and exit the next. That's it.
Now, Ryan, can you please just plug that documentary as well? We've come to the end of the hour here, so I'd like you to actually plug that so you can go and watch it.
War by Deception. The old film's on warbydeception.com. I'll get the new one up there later today. Just go to Rise 2 Cents, or just Google 9/11 Ryan Dawson. You'll find it.
All right. Ryan Dawson, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
All right, thanks, bro. And also, resend me that link as well, and I'll pop it up on the archives of the show today.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Right. Cheers, bro. You too, man, because you've got a day job, unlike a lot of us, and you've got to go do it. All right, see you later, man, and see you next hour, ladies and gentlemen. James Robert Wright from the Council of the Freemasons. We'll be right back.